When Donald Trump returned to office, one of his first acts was to pull America out of the Paris climate deal. In one quick swoop, gone was Joe Biden's green agenda, replaced by the mantra of drill, baby, drill. Today, as COP30 opens, I asked RTE's Yvonne Murray in New York how this plays into the geopolitics of climate and how it all started.
Well, if you cast your mind back, Cian, to 2014, the US and China were very united on the issue of climate change. And in fact, the US President Barack Obama and Chinese leader Xi Jinping met in Beijing and declared their joint commitment to combat climate change, calling it a threat to humanity. And of course, that decision, that push kind of paved the way then for the rest of the world really to come together in COP21 the following year and agree the Paris Agreement. So, you know, I think it's worth looking back at how different the positions were 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, now 10 years on, it's a different picture. President Trump doesn't see climate change the same way as his predecessors.
He doesn't at all. And as we have heard throughout this year now that he's been in office, he's really made it a key message to deliver not just to his domestic audience, but internationally as well. And I think perhaps the biggest illustration of that was at the UN General Assembly here in September, when he told delegates, and I was in the room and there was quite a few shocked reactions, told delegates that climate change was a con job, in his opinion.
Well, let's hear some of that now.
This climate change, it's the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world, in my opinion. Climate change, no matter what happens, you're involved in that. No more global warming, no more global cooling. All of these predictions made by the United Nations and many others, often for bad reasons, were wrong. They were made by stupid people that have cost their country's fortunes and given those same countries no chance for success. If you don't get away from this green scam, your country is going to fail.
Weeks later in London, what did the US do at the International Maritime Organization conference?
Well, this was a conference in London, a UN-backed conference to agree to emissions caps for the shipping industry, effectively. And the US delegation there lobbied extremely heavily against this agreement, to the extent that threats were issued against other countries, but also on other individuals, if they were to vote for it. And as a result, the agreement, which had been due to pass through without any opposition, was kicked down the line until next year. And it really left the organisers quite shocked, with the General Secretary of the IMO saying that this was really not how they conduct business. So I think that was really quite a concrete example of how the Trump administration is willing to export its anti-climate policies.
Well, now it's all eyes on Brazil for COP30 and, of course, the US with them pulling back. How much influence will what's happening in Brazil have?
Well, I've been talking this week to people who are on their way to Belém in Brazil, but also people who are already there. And it seems that while obviously people are really conscious of the complete change in the geopolitical landscape over the past year, at the same time, I think there is a determination for it not to put a dampener on events. And in fact, yesterday I spoke to the lead Brazilian negotiator, Ambassador Lilian Chagas, who told me that, of course, they would prefer if the US was there, but the fact that they're not will not stop everybody else coming together and push forward with their commitments. And she was saying that there is an understanding, a widespread understanding, that climate change presents a very immediate problem and issue for many countries around the world. And they're still there working to do something about it.
As the US retreats, then, what is the position with China?
Well, China's very much stepping into the vacuum that's been left by the United States when it comes to leadership on some of these issues. And I think the real example of that is green energy. And in that sector, China is soaring ahead, has put billions in government investment into the sector, and is also just expanding energy, renewable energies, wind and solar in particular, on such a massive scale. And anybody that you speak to into the in the climate sector will talk about that. And at that UN General Assembly here in September, in fact, the day after Donald Trump made those comments, China's leader Xi Jinping made a surprise appearance at UN Climate Week via video. And he made some new commitments for China's greenhouse gas emissions cuts and also a further expansion of renewables. So I think that there is a sense that China is now leading in this climate space internationally.
So saying all that, where does it leave everyone else?
Well, that's a good question. There is some discussion now, again, speaking to people who are engaged on this issue, that some countries could end up in a situation where they're sort of left having to decide between what they call the petrostate and the electrostate, especially if they have, you know, trading partnerships with both and perhaps feel under pressure to follow one or the other. Having said that, I think there is a sense that for a lot of countries, they really do want to forge their own way. This is an era where people feel that energy security really matters. So developing their own ability to provide their own energy, I think, is really at the forefront of a lot of people's minds. But when it comes to renewables, China really does dominate because they also have, they dominate the critical mineral supply. They process 90% of rare earths, a lot of which go into green tech. So that is going to be an issue for people and for countries going forward if they want energy autonomy.
Yvonne Murray in New York.